Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. The Devon Congress is coming. The Devon Congress is coming. And for all of those who just got that particular historical reference, I'll just say it was purposeful because, yes, the Redcoats are coming to America. But no, not really, because they've been here a while already. But the Redcoats we're referring to are those pretty burgundy red cattle picturesquely grazing on green grass. And you can find them on fields from Maine to California and everywhere in between. But first, okay, let me explain. Every 4 years or so, a bunch of Devon cattle breeders from all over the world get together to celebrate this wondrous animal. They come to compare notes and swap genetics and take a road trip focused on farms in the home country, or just maybe to chat with other Devonites. This is a serious undertaking. They swap off in countries like England and Brazil and Australia and New Zealand and Canada. In regular years, that's a feat in and of itself, but this time they're pulling out all the stops. In April of 2024, the gathering will be held in the United States, and this year it just so happens to be the 400th anniversary of the Devon cattle stepping hoof on our continent, coming to America close on the heels of the Pilgrims. And it doesn't matter if they raise beef Devons here or abroad, or whether they're even the people with a traditional American milking Devon type of cattle, this year, they're all gonna party a bit. Here in the U.S., the beef cattle side of the Devon breed is represented by a fine organization called Red Devon USA, and they're gonna host the whole shebang. So far as I understand the plan, everybody meets up and starts off in Orlando, Florida. They hop on a big luxury tour bus, and for the next few weeks, they'll work their way north, jagging east and west just a little bit as they go. They'll stop at host farms along the way, each one with a little bit of a different type of climate, or ecology, or topology, or history, or purpose. One thing they will all have in common, though, is that they'll have food and friendship and some really nice-looking cattle for the visitors to gander at while they see America's farmland in the springtime. I'm sure everyone will get to see lots more than that, too, because there's a little bit of time built in there for some fun tourist stuff as well. From my recent experience with people in the Red Devon USA organization, though, one thing I can promise is that the Congress attendees will not run out of things to eat, things to talk about, or examples of gracious hospitality. Anyway, the grand tour ends in Plymouth, Massachusetts, where it all began for these beautiful cattle here. The last stop is at Plymouth Patuxent Museum, right next to Plymouth Rock, where a big celebration reception awaits. Everybody will lift a glass or two, the member organizations around the world get to check in, there's more food, and as the evening goes on, we learn some fairly racy phrases in Portuguese and Australian, I think. Anyway, this is one party we definitely don't want to miss, and of course Rick and I will be there to film it. By the way, the American Milking Devon Cattle Association folks will be there in Plymouth too. And to top off the celebration, they're going to walk a team of milking Devon oxen right up the main street of the Living History Museum, right through the gate into a flower-strewn meadow, where these glorious animals are going to have their new home. If you've never seen an oxen under yoke, follow along, because we'll have the cameras on that one the whole time. In preparation for all this excitement, every month until the end of April, we'll be bringing you a conversation from the ones that have the most cause to celebrate, the Red Devonaires themselves. Okay, I'm going to keep making up nicknames because it's just plain fun, and that's what you do at a party. For this group of conversations, we did a week-long run in a very muddy and a very chilly December. We sped through Virginia and Pennsylvania, and we did a little veer over into Ohio. The hospitality on this trip, again, was amazing. We did not stay in one single hotel. And as for food, you know, with the weight gain thing, they say you have the COVID-15. Well, now we have the Pennsylvania 5. First stop was a winery, and the last stop was the butcher, if that tells you anything. So, for today's conversation, we are going to bring you a few moments with Bob and Diana Vankirk from the Four Seasons Farm in Tyrone, Pennsylvania. Bob is a retired pharmaceutical rep who now focuses full-time on producing fine-looking cattle. I haven't figured out if Diana's a true cattle widow, a good sport, both, or just maybe a person who knows that people are going to come begging for her delicious pot roast, so maybe she better keep the beef cattle rancher in the family. And I also haven't figured out how Bob managed to plan it so we had a cow in advanced labor the moment we drove up. The timing was perfect. If you've never seen a baby calf pop out and you want to see that, head on over to our YouTube channel, because of course we filmed that. Now, I'll tell you right now that all of the members of Red Devon USA seem to razz each other a bit, which is kind of fun to watch. Bob takes his fair share of that ribbing, and I think it's partly because he's an exacting kind of soul, at least from my perspective. When we were planning the Congress project, Rick and I had a few conversations with the board of directors of Red Devon USA, and when we did, Bob was the guy who wanted to drill down on the details. And I think it's because he's trying to figure out what it'll take to get to the point where he wants to go. And I'm kind of an exacting soul, too. Bookkeepers of the world, unite, please. Anyway, I kind of felt a little bit of kinship with Bob in that way. And I'd like to think that the world turns a little more smoothly because of all of us detail people. It's tax time right now, so I'm hoping you all understand that one. But the thing I really left thinking about quite a bit after that visit was, I think Bob really loves his cattle. He talks to them as he passes by, and he gives them a pat or a scratch here and there. When that cow was in labor, he must have mentioned 3 or 4 times how wonderful she was doing and how easy it is in calving with Devons. He talked about how efficient they were on grass and how far they can walk at a good clip and how easy they are to keep in general. He speaks with affection about Devons, and you can tell that he really likes them. Now, don't get me wrong, he sells them regularly, and he has no problem deciding who to keep and who to send to freezer camp, I don't think. But I believe that he has a deep and abiding affection for this breed, and I think maybe those of us who are the quantifiable and exacting people in life have the ability to have a bone-deep appreciation for something that returns effort in exponents. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Here are Bob Vankirk and his lovely wife Diana of Four Seasons Farm. And wait, one more note. I just have to say, if you hear me sniffle a lot during the labor and delivery scene, just remember that it was December, and it was a cold December at that. I think the calf was out in 20 minutes, but my feet and my nose said it was much longer than that. Thank the heavens above for pot roast and Diana.
I'm Bob, and this is my wife, Diana Vankirk, at Four Seasons Farm in Pennsylvania. And we're here at one of our rental farms that we run the cattle all summer. We're just finishing up our grazing season here in December, and we have 8 pairs here, a mix of Devon crosses and some pure Devons, and one of our main herd bulls is here as well.
Lovely. Are you as involved in the cattle, or are you a cattle widow?
I'm the meat seller, and then I just am a good sport. Yeah, help him out whenever he needs to with the cattle.
Well, so you know, you say four seasons. It is warmer than this in one of the seasons.
Yeah, it definitely is. This is kind of an end of all the nice weather and all the good grass, and so now we're gearing up for winter, and we feed a lot of hay in the winter. I know down in Virginia they're able to graze most of the winter, but up here we don't have enough ground and the weather and such. It just makes sense to feed hay for at least 4 months.
Well, and I'm looking at the hillside in back of us. It is kind of mid-December, and we did hit a little dusting of snow on the way in, and there's a bit of rock here. So it's one of those places where the cattle are going to have to be a little sturdy that you have, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of hills here, and the cattle have to travel actually like a mile to water at times. So that's another thing that's nice with the Devons is that they can handle that, and they do very well on it. So.
Yeah, they did the Oregon Trail, right? So this is probably nothing
exactly.
In Devon language.
Yeah, I mean, two of the things we really like about Devons, number one is the docility. They're just easy to work with. And number two is their performance on grass. And it doesn't have to be fancy grass. It can be perennial, native, whatever's growing there, grass, and they do well and they perform on it.
Now, you say docility, and we hear that a lot, but it's kind of interesting. People associate beef cattle with something that's big and masculine, but when you have a cow or a bull or calves, you want to be able to handle them, and if it's a family a breed of cattle that's on a small farm, you have to be able to send your 10-year-old out there to do what they might do without the risk of some serious bodily harm, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah,
we don't want anything that kids can't walk out in the field with. And I mean, our cattle are, we grew up with our kids with around them, and we've had no issues with them. We've had no issue with bulls. You know, we're able to just go out in the field and separate a bull with a piece of rope between two people and move that bull and load him on a trailer, and done that. Every time I do it, I'm just amazed because it goes that well every time. But they're just great animals. They're smart. They pay attention, and it's almost like they respect you. I wonder if it isn't because generations of generations they've grown up with people and been around people. And I would guess 200 years ago, if one was a problem, it probably ended up in the freezer. So that genetic probably didn't pass on. So there's a lot of heritage in the genetics with this breed, and I think it's really made them a great animal for our family farm or for grass finish, which is taken off. The market's going crazy, and I think that's why Devons are really in the limelight now. So
yeah, and they're not just big here. I mean, they're all over. They have Australia and Brazil, and obviously in England they have Devons. And I mean, this is kind of, it's not ubiquitous, but it's getting close to that because people, it's a breed with elasticity too, correct, in terms of its tolerances?
Tolerances as far as
heat and cold. And,
oh yeah. I mean, yeah, you'll see them. I mean, we've sold cattle to people in Florida. I know there's cattle in Mexico, and we've sold cattle to people in Canada. So, and then I know there's one breeder out in Montana, and there was a breeder in California for several years. So they are all over the country. And I think one of the strengths of the Devon breed, especially now, is there's a lot of diversity in the breed too. Because like you say, we have genetics here now from England, we have genetics from New Zealand, we have a lot of American genetics as well. So that there's a combination of different sizes and different hair coats and different milk production, which you can kind of tailor to fit whatever market you want.
Yes, why they headed 3,000 miles across the country and made it in Oregon as well as Colorado in the middle and as well as Texas in the south and, you know, wherever they happen to be along the way. So, yeah, well, I'd love it if you'd take us on up there, if you
sure.
would, or as close as you want to get. So if you want to talk about it at all as we walk, we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, our herd bull, hopefully we'll be able to get close to him. He's actually has new genetics from England, New Zealand, as well as American. So he's kind of a neat combination of genetics. And I like him because he's a good outcross for pretty much any Devon herd in the country because of that. And then these calves were all sired by a bull. An Oban is it the name of the bull, and he's from New Zealand as well. So we like to try to tailor different genetics and try to tailor the size of animal we get, time to finish, and we've had good success with some of these different lines.
One of the interesting things to me is that with selection, it you know, that's not just a thing where nature selects or people select. You know, across the country, the guy in California might have a very different idea of what his perfect beef Devon looks like than the guy in Connecticut, right?
And I think you'll see that on the World Devon Congress. You'll have different types, different genetic lines.
That's a great reason to go on that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It will be a great event because there's going to be so many good cattle and different lines from different countries, and plus a lot of perspective from people that are there from the different countries. So
now we got calves out here. Are we okay with your cows? Okay,
yep,
got a little Hereford in here, obviously, in some of them.
Yep.
Yeah, now that's one of the things that I think is great too, is that Jeremy was saying that a lot of people use these cattle to get other qualities in other breeds because you get that nice hybrid vigor, and they they bring some of the characteristics with them nicely. So you utilize that?
Absolutely. I mean, we started that way. We started with Devon bulls, and we're mainly doing meat, but we love the bulls so much and what they were doing with the other cows that we've gone more and more towards the purebred Devons. But yeah, I mean, they add docility and performance on grass. I mean, you can see these cows, they're in good condition. They've just been on grass all summer, and they're obviously nursing calves now.
Okay, so Rick has got the camera on your cattle. Tell me what you like about your ideal Devon. What shape, size, conformation, traits, what you look for?
Well, I mean, I do find as a seed stock producer, I find some folks like a smaller, like a frame 3 animal. Other people like more like a 4 or 5. So we have some of each. This is kind of just a group there's no particular reason there. They just happen to calve over here, and that's why they're still here. But these are pretty much like frame 4, kind of middle of the road cows.
That the cow going up the hill, it's really interesting. I don't know how old she is, but the difference in the udder size.
Yes, she's obviously not got a very good udder, and she's actually mostly a Hereford. She's got a little bit of Devon in her.
But look at the height on the Devons of the udder. How nice and
tight. Yes.
Nice and tight they are. And it's interesting because if you go with the classic, the American Milking Devon, the original Devon style, that one of the things they're well known for is the milk.
Right.
Yeah.
And I found it, though, it's interesting, though, they don't have to be sagging, drooping to be good milkers either, necessarily. People kind of have that perception sometimes, but...
Well, I believe originally Devonshire Cream came from that area, and I'm assuming that part of that is that original Devon cattle breed had something to say with that, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, we do really want to have udders that are the calf can nurse on with no problem. Smaller teats, nice tight udders. There are maybe some with a little longer teats or such, but it has to be a functional cow. And we have several of our animals that, you know, are well into their teens and still producing and nursing calves. So longevity is another really big thing with them. So.
Okay, so obviously you've got a high udder. You've got a cow that can walk. There, I mean, I know that the original ones were athletes, right? I mean, they're really great for oxen. Do you notice that your cattle are kind of they move where they need to move? You said they can walk for water quite well.
Absolutely, and I mean they'll move. It's amazing to me because they'll go over there. I mean, I've split the paddocks up, but they'll be on 50 acres, and they get to every spot on that 50 acres. They find the grass, so they're very efficient, you know, back and forth and getting what they need. And yeah, we're looking at the Sir Perfection Bull. He's a combination of New Zealand genetics as well as English and American. So he's got the Tappaway line, Kikambi Jante from England, and Crooked Tree from America as part of his pedigree.
He's looking at us.
He was a reserve champion bull at our show last year as a 2-year-old. So hope you get the chance to make the World Devon Congress and you get to see him in person.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Join us each week on the Well Beyond Medicine podcast as we explore the 80% of child health impacts that occur outside the doctor's office. Listen and subscribe at nemourswellbeyond.org, where you'll hear pediatric experts, researchers, and policymakers from around the world discussing ways they are revolutionizing children's health. I'm your host, Carol Vassar. Let's go.
How you doing, buddy? Skip! 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 Hey, buddy. things I like about Devons are generally very calving-ese. Since I was here, I just wanted to make sure that foot was both forward, one was back a little bit. She probably would have been all right, but you can see the calves right there. The head's going to come out soon. You can see its tongue sticking there.
We appreciate you planning this just so it would be something we could film. Now, it is December and it's cold.
Yes.
And you're calving. Is that a problem?
It's not really cold for cows. And I mean, the main thing is to keep them dry and clean. And we have access to this barn for that reason. With our fall calvers, they can go in and out as they please, but if it was raining or snowing out hard, I probably would bring them in here to calve and lock them in if I knew they were close. So I knew she was, I got a couple more to go and I'll be done for the season too. So
has gestation on these guys in a little over 9 months?
Yes, it's like okay. 285 days roughly.
And so when you do crossbreeding on Devons, they're not huge cattle generally, but beef Devons are a little bigger than milking Devons.
Yes.
In terms of the do you have any issues with calving when you do crossbreeding at all, or is it mostly a Devon bull on a different cow? And so therefore you might avoid that.
I think they're really, you just have to watch some of the bigger bulls from overseas I've found. Some of them are larger, can throw larger calves. So I'm just more cautious with heifers. I haven't had any calving issues with cows. But with heifers, I like to make sure I got a bull I know is going to throw smaller calves. It always amazes me.
Isn't that a phenomenal
thing? They come
thing?
Out, and it's just such a miracle. They seem lifeless when they come out.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's the first thing that goes through my head. Was there going to be a problem with that? Because the gray tongue, and yet you are in such a compressed space.
And she's pushing them out pretty quick, really. I mean, we've only been here a matter of minutes.
Yes.
And she just went into hard labor when we walked in the door, so I timed that for you.
I so much appreciate that. I know that takes a lot of scheduling.
You can see
it?
The calf moving, so.
Yeah, now he's gone. There he goes. Or she.
But calving ease is one thing we have really enjoyed with Devons, and they're very maternal, and I like that they're very maternal and protective of their calves, but they're not like, it's like they trust us as the caretaker too. I don't have trouble with them generally.
I've heard Devons are pretty smart.
They're pretty smart animals. Good job, Mama. Yeah, what'd you do? You better get up and check them out. It's a boy.
You know, I think the Devon is a great example of what happens in pretty much all production agriculture, or what has happened in the 1900s, 1800s, where we needed to feed the country and it came back from the wars, and all of a sudden we're starting to ramp up production. And so you select for different traits, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you still have the same kind of genetically, almost exactly the same animal up to a certain point in its history, and then you start selecting for the beef instead of the milk. But you still have many of these phenomenal traits that made that animal so fantastic.
I was going to say, I mean, you look at her and she doesn't look like a traditional milking animal by any means. She's very deep body, very muscle for a dairy animal. So it's kind of like they're in between, and because they did fit all three of those purposes.
Can I say a cow is pretty? Is that a terrible thing?
Do I think you like can say that.
My dad used to say that, boy, that's a pretty cow. And he was a beef guy, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a beautiful animal. So I'm just going to ask you, since we're standing here, if you had one of these animals that you say, hey, that's one of my favorites, which one would it be?
Well, actually, the one that has a calf is one. If you look at her, she's a very wide cow back through the loin. You could actually put a dinner table on her back there. And she's very deep from side to side, too. Mm-hmm. She has a nice udder, too, with teats that the calf can get on easily. She's kind of full of milk right now, but she's had four or five calves, so she's kind of proven that she's holding up and she's performing and she's maintaining that condition. And then she's just a nice, quiet animal, as you can see. Even she's focused on that baby. She's not even paying attention to us.
Yeah, and we have a very unfamiliar piece of equipment in front of her with people she doesn't know. So she's got an eye on us, but she's very definitely focused on that calf.
Well, the Devon market is, for our farm, is the strongest it's ever been. This was our best year ever by far. But we find some folks who want to get started, maybe they can't afford some top quality Devons, but they want some cattle that work well on grass. So we were able to sell them some of our commercial cows that were proven. Mm-hmm. And that was a win-win because that way we can focus more on our genetics. And they were able to get started with some good cattle. And they were all bred to Devon bulls, so they were.
Yeah. Getting... Okay, so now talk to me a little bit. You're a board member of Red Devon USA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so in terms of the organization, you obviously have a registry, I'm assuming. We haven't talked much about the board and the goals of the organization. Tell me a little bit about Red Devon.
Well, Red Devon, I mean, one of our main focuses is to keep a registry, keep that herd book going. We actually require DNA parentage. So when we register a calf, it has to have the right sire and dam. And that just kind of adds to, I think, the heritage of this breed, making sure things are accurate, because it does go back so many years, the pedigrees on these animals. And but, you know, we're just trying to promote the breed, the benefits of the breed. And, you know, just I think the more people find out about Devons, the more people want them.
But
I mean, I had cattle over at that other farm. I went out one day and there was two Angus cows in their calves. Here they were from 5 miles down the road. They just jumped all the fences and jumped our fence and were in with my cows. And it's like, why? I mean, why do people deal with animals like that? Here I run single poly wire for as a perimeter fence with these cows. And so it's they're easy cattle. You know, they're easy to work with. They're easy calving. They're easy to finish. They're just easy for the producer, and it makes it easier on them, too, because they don't get all stressed out over things. I mean, how many cows could you just stand right beside her? And, you know, depending on what your goals are, you know, if you have black Angus, pure Angus cattle, when you cross a Devon bull, those calves are probably all going to be black.
Well, you've heard that, yes.
So if you're selling to a commercial market, you have that option.
Yeah.
Or if you're finishing on grass, you're going to get the performance of the Devon genetics injected into that situation. So, yeah, we've got a few pure Angus cows here, and you know they work great for meat production. So it kind of depends on what your goals are. I mean, we wanted to be able to be seed stock producers, and that's part of the reason we wanted the purebred Devons. It just depends on where you want to go with it. If some people want pure Devons just to raise meat, so it just depends on. But they do have the option, if they do want to sell some seed stock along the way, if they have purebreds. That's the other advantage of it. I find pedigreed animals sell for a lot more, too. It's another reason to register.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't buy anything if it wasn't registered. It doesn't matter how good it is, because I can't build on it.
Yeah.
This is just part of the Devon disposition. This is my friend here.
Now, you look at that mud. This is here. We're in Pennsylvania, 2.5, 3.5 hours from the Virginia area where it was red, and now you got this grayish.
Yeah, we've got a lot of clay.
Yeah.
And so when it rains this time of year, it just sits there and turns to mud. So we just deal the best we can with it. But the cattle manage it. They hold up well. We don't have feet trouble.
Doesn't seem to bug them.
They still like their back scratches. She's like, more.
So when you have a a seed operation. The concept is that you raise the calves and then you have somebody else that wants to raise them the rest of the way out of the weaning time, right? Or no?
Well, we raise them till they're this age. These guys are like 7-8 months old.
Okay.
And they'll be weaned soon. So we have our fall calving group that's calving now, and then we have the spring calvers. So once they're 7-8 months old, they get weaned. And then we sell some heifers at that age or bulls, but generally we keep them till they're 1.5, 2 years of age.
So you really want to be born a spring calf instead of a fall calf,
it's
right? Kinda,
depends on what the spring's like. Sometimes it's pretty muddy. You see, there's a real nice bull calf right there that will be going into our bull group.
So what's the time that you decide whether or not to castrate? Because that would be such a tough thing. Am I going to keep this one to breed it? I mean, what if you cut the wrong one? And then there goes that gorgeous, I guess you could clone at this day and age, but, you know.
It is a tough one. I mean, generally, I mean, if a cow has any deficiencies at all, we cut them at birth, basically. But then after that, about... It depends. See, these guys were out on another farm, so I really didn't have a chance. I will evaluate them now, and some of them will get banded. We'll keep the best based off their mothers and the way they look. I mean, that I know that bull's mother right there is one of our top cows. Mm-hmm. Actually, his mother is a half-sister to that cow I was just scratching. But you can see him, just tremendous depth, growth for his age. And he's real quiet, too.
What a tough choice, though. I mean, think about it. Once it's done, it's done.
Well, but, yeah, I'll take all of them. My bull gave me 20 out of 24 were bulls. So I'll take all them bulls, and probably at least half of them will get cut.
But, you know, at least for me, I wasn't a real person until I hit 28, 30. I mean, the real person that I am now, I didn't like myself much for the first couple decades. And then you come into your own, and you know... Are cattle like that too, or do some of them change over time, or is it pretty much, yeah, you kind of know within a couple months if that one's going to...
You kind of get a feeling at 2-3 months, but it really takes, you know, you look at them like weaning time now, and then there may be some even after that that you just decide you don't want to leave as bulls, or you sell as hamburger because you kept them as a bull too long.
Yep. Now, is that a milking, Devin? Because horns and that coat seems to be just a little more slick. Is that right or no?
Yep, it definitely is. They tend to be a little lighter and they don't get quite as heavy a hair coat and they're slicker.
Which you would think. I hear they do really, really well. I mean, John says that in Connecticut winters they do fantastic.
Yeah, which is amazing because it doesn't seem to affect them with the cold or the heat for that matter, either one.
You think they get really shaggy, but I guess not. And then the cream color on the tail, like on the points that they get. I think that's also a milking Devon characteristic. Do beef Devons get that as well? Do they have the lighter colored tail?
Yeah, they do. Some of these calves you don't see it as much because they get it when they're a little older or they're kind of muddy too. But we can walk in here if you want.
I'm going to let you do the testing on that fence first.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was off. It's off.
You coming in? Yep. You're going to film from the other side of the fence. This is the part where I have to make sure my foot balances. It's going to be really spectacular.
Put you through the test here.
Hi.
These ones with the... red tags were the ones we had at the show last year.
Okay, now you say the show. Is this a beef Devon show?
We have a national red Devon show.
Yep.
We don't necessarily have one every year, but we had one last year. That's a 10-year-old cow, actually.
That's amazing. I mean, is that... I have to admit, I don't know what the longevity on... a different breed on the different breeds of cattle are, but I do know that
I think 8 is actually the average.
Is it?
But I'd say we're averaging more like 12, 14 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and fertility quite a bit longer than the average cow, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't have a calf every year, there's no point keeping them. So that's why they're here, because they're producing. So
yeah. Okay, well, my husband's feeding and he's losing his light, so I guess now we move in.
Well, huh? I bought these milking Devons, and you know what they told me? They told me one was called Goodness and one was called Gentle. And after I got them, you know what they told me? They said their name is just what you want them to be. It doesn't mean they are that. So this is Goodness here. And she's actually halter broke. And she's a pet.
Oh boy, that didn't even faze her there.
Well, this is her favorite thing. She'd come up to my neighbor with her head down, and just because she wants her pole scratched. But it's going to be a little intimidating. But
so do you hit the Milking Devon Association when you want a Milking Devon? Or do you, how does that work?
Well, I just happen to get these few, and I AI'd to get that young one. So I got straws of a Milking Devon bull to do that one. But
the man with the boots is taking me through the mud.
I just wanted to let you see the big guy here.
I know this is what you do to Californians, right?
Don't make me hurt you.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We would like to thank Bob and Diana for hosting us this past December. And if you want to find out more information about Bob and Diana's farm, please go to their website at fourseasonscattle.com. We'll see you next time with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2023.